I thought of the most perfect way of utilizing the kind of reactive power that what I study is the generation of free energy, namely when current is inverted 180 degrees relative to the polarization of voltage. So the watts are zero, and unless you put it through a simple resistor in which there's no inductive reactance and no capacitive reactance, there's not much chance of getting much use out of it. Sorry for the background noise. There's little chance of getting anything useful out of it because it's still going to be askew. But passing it through a simple resistor puts the waves back together again. And I only in the past thought of an example of a resistive heating element. But guess what? There's a guy by the name of Ossie Callanan, I believe his name is. And he did a modification of John Bedini's switching circuit in which he used a mechanical relay to do the switching. And in order to get the so-called radiant energy spikes to change into usable power, well, spikes are triangle waves, and radiant energy is what I deal with, 180 degrees out of phase relationship between voltage and current. So he said to pass it through a bank of dead batteries, the more the merrier, and put them both in series and in parallel, and bury them in the ground underneath your house. And needless to say, you know, everything's shorting out, you know, between the terminals, since it's, you know, moist earth. But be that as it may, he said it works. It converts the radiant energy into real power, usable power. And why not? Because it's not an inductive reactant component. It's not a capacitive reactive component. It's purely resistive. And with dead batteries, you got maximum resistance. So it's perfect. Now, there's only one way to do this correctly and not screw things up. And there's only two possibilities. And that is, which way do we want the voltage oriented towards the battery terminals? Let's say they're all in series, just to keep things simple for the moment. And so all their terminals are in alignment. You know, all the positives are pointing in the same direction, and they're all in series connected. Which way do we orient the voltage so that the current in opposition to the voltage is correct and vice versa? Well, it turns out we want the current to not go opposed to the terminals. We're not trying to charge the batteries. We want the current to come from behind and enter the negative terminal and come out the positive terminal like it normally does, if that's what it normally does. Because I get screwed up between conventional current and electron current, so I don't even try to, you know, keep track of that. Let's just say the current coming, polarization coming out of the free energy device is in alignment, is in parallel with the alignment of current that would have come out of the batteries had they been discharging. So we're not trying to charge the batteries. Meanwhile, the voltage will be attempting to charge the batteries because it'll be going in reverse. And that's perfect, I think. Unless I got it totally backwards. You know, what flips? You know, they say don't overcharge, I guess, a battery because you can flip the terminals. You know, you can flip the polarization of the terminals. I think that was with nickel metal hydride, but it might be with other batteries as well. I'm not sure. And they say it's not a good idea. Well, so which is it? What flips the terminals? Is it the current or is it the voltage? I think it's the current. And thus, I think this will be the safe way, but I could be dead wrong. I could be the opposite is the way it's supposed to be. Regardless, you only get two choices, and you test it out, and you see which one works, and then you know what works. but it should work. It should put the two waves back together again. Oh, so that's the real telling question. Which gets flipped? Well, if the current gets flipped, that means the current is going to be going and coming out the battery as if it's being recharged. That doesn't sound good. No, if we want it to flip, we want it to come out the other way. That's right, I forgot about that. So actually, it should go the other way. So the voltage should not be opposed to the voltage orientation of the dead batteries. It should be in parallel with it. And the current is opposed, but it'll come out in reverse. So it'll prevent the terminals, the plates of the battery from becoming reversed. It'll prevent it. It'll heal the batteries. It'll regenerate them. And they'll be good as new. Oh, no. But once the batteries get charged, let's see. So the voltage is in alignment. The current is reversed. So the current is attempting to charge the batteries, but it'll come out as if they're being discharged. So you'll never have to change the orientation of the batteries, plates, the terminals, once the batteries get regenerated and recharged. They should recharge. Or they will remain dead, and the current will simply keep coming out of the batteries as if they are discharging. You know, that might be what will happen. And the batteries will remain dead. Because he never said anything about, oh, the batteries may come back to life. And so we have to assume they don't. And of course they won't, because they're not being recharged. They may be regenerated. Maybe. But he didn't care, because he was just using them as a device, as a resistive device. And he said they were perfect, so why not use them? Hey, it was his suggestion. It probably works. So this, I think, completes this series of podcasts, and this is part 3, in which I talk about where does free energy come from, and I get into the mathematics of, well, it comes out of a very specific portion of this complex enumeration of reactants, namely the imaginary component of complex numbers. Meanwhile, the real number component, or portion of complex numbers, is continually reducing itself by comparison to the reactants, or excuse me, the imaginary portion, which signifies the reactants, which is continually exponentially amplifying. And that's provided we, of course, feed our free energy device with a scant strength of signal. It could be DC, could be AC, but it's got to be like picowatts, nanowatts. It's got to be really, really dinky. And normally I use a microvolt, but sometimes what I'll do is I'll use a current division and waste the excess current to an additional ground. And meanwhile, the primary ground is behind the voltage input so that there's no throughput. We're just vibrating this damn thing without expecting any output to come out, because the load is going to be self-looped back to the circuit. So there's no exterior ground or throughput or pass-through, maybe that's the way to put it. No exterior pass-through for the load. We don't want it to go anywhere. We want it to come back to the circuit. So we're just vibrating the circuit with a scant signal strength. And with a scant signal whose strength is like practically nothing. And that'll ensure that we don't suppress, i.e. regulate, the reactant voltage, because the reactant voltage is the second V of V squared divided by resistance equals Ohm's law for watts. This is the correct version of Ohm's law, not voltage times current, because current is a shorthand notation for voltage divided by resistance. And so there are two different voltages. They're not the same. That is, they're taught, the electrical engineers are taught erroneously. There's the applied voltage and there's the reactive voltage. And they're not the same entities. It's like you're standing on a bridge, an overpass of a freeway, and you see the trucks enter and you see the trucks exit. But what if they don't exit out the opposite side of the underpass or of the overpass? What if a completely different set of cars, out of synchronicity with the ones entering, exit the blind spot, your blind spot of the overpass that you're standing on top of, indicating that the voltage which enters is not the same as the voltage which exits the circuit. And so energy does not equal energy out, energy in versus energy out, because first of all, it's not energy, and second of all, because if only one side of the equation of in versus out is reactance. That whole idea of energy in versus energy out is a waste of time. And if we're favoring reactance so that the energy diminishes to like zero practically, as close to infinitely small zero as we can get it, then there really isn't energy out, per se. It's mostly reactance out, dwarfing, because it's exponentially self-amplifying, self-looping, because it's lossless, right? It's not energy, so you can't lose it, so it's not... thermodynamics does not pertain to this, and conservation of energy is because it's not energy, and so it's not going to be conserved. So this, but we have to favor reactance by using a scant signal to initiate vibration within our oscillating free energy circuit. And of course, we're creating the precursor to free energy. We're not creating free energy because the current and the voltage are out of phase by 180 degrees. But so what? It's not going to take... Sometimes I've used a spark gap adjacent to an inductor to turn the inductor around 180 degrees. So instead of a lagging current, it becomes a leading current by 90 degrees. That's a very interesting inductor, and I've read about it. They do exist, so they're not unknown. But you can literally get an inductor to behave opposite to the way that it normally does, with a leading current rather than a lagging current. And it's very interesting. But all you have to do is put a spark gap, a neon bulb, adjacent or neighboring to the inductor. Anyway, there are all these different ways of trying to put the phases of voltage and current back together again. And of course, current is a fiction. It's just a convenience. We use it so long as we realize at all times that it's a mathematical contrivance, shorthand, to make simpler the idea that reactant voltage divided by impedance is a little too much to swallow, and so we just substitute it with a single I symbol, a capital I representing current. One last thought. You know how I like to say very often that this kind of precursor to free energy is a standing wave? Well, I get that from Eric Dollard talking about Nikola Tesla's preferred methodology of transmitting energy without wires. He did not transmit in the sense that it goes from point A to point B. He said it's more like the way a lightning bolt strikes. It doesn't move. It actually gathers at right angles from the surrounding radius of the path of what will become the pathway of the lightning bolt. And like a vortex, it gets sucked in to the perpendicularity of the linear path that the lightning bolt is going to take. And that indicates to me that it's not traveling like we think from cloud to ground or ground to cloud. That's just an orientation of polarization. That has nothing to do with actual traveling. That's the voltage, the orientation of voltage, the terminals of voltage. You know, is the positive in the clouds or is it down in the ground and the negative on the opposite side? Or is it going between clouds? Regardless, that's the voltage orientation. But the actual current, or the precursor to current, is coming at right angles outside the linear lineup of the voltage strike, the lightning strike, as if it were a vortex sucking it in to feed itself and give itself what it needs in order to strike. So that's an example, and that's, he related it to lightning, and he related it to Tesla's transmitting Tesla's magnifying transmitter. You know, transmission of energy and communication without wires. Well, in this instance of just, well, what am I dealing with when I'm dealing with voltage whose orientation of polarization is opposed to that of the current, giving negative watts? To me, that looks like a standing wave, the way Eric Dollard talked about Nikola Tesla and lightning bolts, mostly Nikola Tesla. He said it was, the way he described Nikola Tesla's transmission of power, it wasn't that it moved, but that it comes into a mutual coordination, shall we say, or cooperation between the two terminals of the pathway, the two endpoints. So it's not like it's moving from one place to another. They are both contributing whatever it takes to make it happen. And the current did not travel. You know, if you have to broadcast like radio broadcasters do, now you've got traveling waves and it takes a tremendous amount of voltage to get them to move. But Tesla didn't have to do that because he wasn't trying to make it move. It came from both points and the surrounding area simultaneously. It came from the surrounding space of what will become the pathway. And it fed the pathway. And this is the problem with reactive power when the current is opposed to the voltage by 180 degrees. If you have any source of power nearby, instead of the reactants trying to generate it from within itself, from the reactants contained within the fields, the reactant fields of the circuit, it's going to steal energy from nearby, any fields that it can grab out and reach and make a touch, make a communication with. And this is probably why the Amon brothers were charged, or C. Earl Amon in particular, was charged with stealing energy from the grid. When he took his device, after they gave their demonstration in Denver, Colorado in 1921, in which at least two newspaper reporters showed up from two different newspapers to report the incidents of them powering their electric car that was converted from battery power into non-battery power using their power station of special design, using a lot of iron and certain minerals. And it was like the shape of a barrel, a wine barrel, a small wine cask, strapped to the front end of their electric car. Now, in those days, their electric cars in general were more like our go-karts of today, our golf carts of today. They had one speed on, off, you know, and it wasn't like a race car, and it wasn't like a Pierce Arrow, which presumably Tesla fiddled around with 10 years later in 1931. Sorry, I just ate. I'm old. What can I say? Let's see. So, what was I getting at now? So, Nikola Tesla did not need a return path, and Eric Dollard vindicated Nikola Tesla's device, his magnifying transmission of power, wirelessly. Eric Dollard sent it through the earth, and there was no return wire to separate a second pathway of conductivity opposed in orientation to the sending pathway to create a loop, a circuit, a circle. Instead, he just sent it from the mainland in Santa Barbara, about 24, 5, or 6 miles to the coast, to their little light bulb, which served as their load. And they picked up, they had a special antenna, and they grounded their aerial into the earth, and the soil was moist. And they picked up the power, but there was no return pathway. So this is why Eric Dollard had to explain this, because obviously the energy can't be sent if there's no return path for it to come back on, then it never went. It's simply a mutual conjunction between two terminals of transmission that come together and coordinate in a cooperative fashion to create this event of energy that's not really energy, is it? Because the phases of voltage and current are out of phase by one half cycle, 180 degrees precisely. And they're spikes, they're not sine waves, or triangle waves if you prefer. If they're compressed, then they will appear to be spikes. But if they're pushed out, you know, depending on your perspective, they'll either be spikes or triangle waves. Your choice of perspective. Anyway, so there's one other instance, and this is John Bedini. Getting back to John Bedini, he would give demonstrations on film, on camera, that he was dealing with radiant energy because he had a single line, and at the end of that line he had a neon bulb. One terminal of that neon bulb was connected to the line, and the other terminal he went and he made contact with the battery case of the circuit to show there was no return path and he was simply sending energy or getting energy from the battery case, the case surrounding the battery. And he said this is radiant energy because it's only a single wire connection. So he was vindicating what Eric Dollard had also vindicated of Tesla's magnifying transmission of power that does not require a return path. And it was not conductive because he sent it through bedrock. The aerial that he broadcast was not the round thing on the top of his tower. It was down below. He had his laborers tunnel into the bedrock beneath the topsoil. Various tunnels in which he embedded his antenna to serve as the broadcast through the dielectric medium of the bedrock of the Earth. So he wasn't even using conductivity. He was using dielectricity. It was dielectric transmission of power. It's uncanny. So, of course, it's, what do you need a return path for? You can do the same thing with empty space. That's a dielectric medium. But he chose the Earth because he wanted it to be, mostly, focused. His focus was consumers, on the planet, living on the surface of the Earth. So they could all have power and communications and separate private channels for their communication or their power reception. So you got your power and somebody else got theirs and you could have separate accounts and charge them all. It doesn't mean it had to be free. Lots of people like to say it's free. The other people say, no, Tesla wasn't interested in giving it away. He was interested in making money. So he did provide for channels of communication. If he did that for communication, it would have applied to power transmission as well as communication transmission. And everybody having their own private channel, nobody else could break into that channel because it would be like encrypted. We'd need him to explain it, or somebody like Eric Dollard or whatever, but I don't understand that, but I'm just relaying to you the story. So people could be charged, he wasn't just giving it away for free. But he did want to have, he did want to bypass copper cable transmission lines. And the power was coming from the Earth. He was simply sending a signal out that made use of the power within the Earth, the reactants of the bedrock. That's what he was using. He was using the reactants of the bedrock and the conductivity of the topsoil and the conductivity of the atmospheric layer above the topsoil, the biosphere. But mostly the bedrock. That was his focus. And when you're thinking that way, you're thinking totally different than the way conventional wisdom dictates. And so you get to make all these modifications to the overall picture of the of what's happening. Namely, there's no return line. There's no sending of anything because there's no return for it to come back on. So you never sent it out in the first place. And this really is what radiant energy is. It's what I'm dealing with under simulation. People have already demonstrated radiant energy. That it can light light bulbs, It does great with resistive loads like light bulbs and batteries to convert the power into something useful. But if you're going to get into a motor load, it gets a little more dicey and now you got to really know what you're doing. And I don't, obviously. I got ideas, but they're just speculative. Cross-winding rewinding the coils of a motor so that they're cross-wound. They come in pairs and they're cross-wound. So that the current of one winding will match up with the voltage of if it's partner winding that's cross-wound and vice versa. So that you'll be able to get wattage in the fields surrounding the cross-wound pair of coils. That's what I would consider to be the ideal way to do this. And it was said, Peter Savar did say of Nikola Tesla's AC motor that was placed in the Pierce Arrow of 1931, that it was custom made. Now, it probably was three phase, and I don't understand three phase, so I don't even go there. I understand single phase. That's easy for me. But triple phase, quadruple phase, Tesla favored, according to Eric Dollard, four phase motors and generators because it was more natural. It just required more copper. And so we don't use it in today's world, but it was more natural and yada yada. And it's very similar to single phase. Anyway, it's not much different than single phase when it comes out to it. I didn't know this until I got to know what single phase motors do, how they're constructed. They have an extra pair of coils that are the starter coils that are independent of the pair of main coils on opposite sides and or one side, as the case may be. And the starter coils, but though, are on opposite sides at 90 degrees of the armature displaced from the main coil or the two pair that are on opposite side main coils. But the starter coils are self-looped. Each one loops to itself. And it's very stout copper. And they bore holes through the armature. This was a single-phase induction motor that I took out of an ice cream machine. You know, you make ice cream at home, you know, with a bucket of ice and whatnot, and an aluminum canister in the middle that rotates, or the outer one rotates, and the paddles, or no, the canister stays still, the paddle stays still, the canister rotates, and then you've got the outer canister with the ice, and the ice water, and the salt. So I took the motor out, and I disassembled it, and I inspected it, and then I started to simulate on that basis, and I came up with interesting stuff. Anyway, so I don't know what a three-phase motor is, and so I can't even speculate. I can't even begin to. And he probably used either a three- or a four-phase motor inside the Piercero, but needless, besides that, or regardless to that, this kind of thinking, though, of so-called radiant energy, and now giving it a definition, an electrical definition, so that we can actually understand what the theory is behind radiant energy. Now we can understand what Tesla was talking about. He was talking about radiant energy, you know, it's like blah, 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 you know. It didn't mean anything to anybody. But he gave it, now I can see why he wasn't just trying to be a showman when he gave it a name different to differentiate it from conventional electrical engineering. It's because electrical engineering doesn't study this stuff. It couldn't care less. And so why not make up his own name? Why not? You know, electrical engineers on the internet will claim that negative unity power factor does not exist. That's simply the generation of power. No, generators don't operate with the current opposed to the voltage. That's the way we put it in our simulators. But in the real world, it behaves like any inductor behaves with lagging current, 90 degrees. Or less, but it's, you know, maximum 90 degrees lagging current. So to have it lag or lead by 180 degrees, whichever way you want to describe it, amounts to the same thing, doesn't exist in the real world. In the conventional world of the reality of electrical engineering. So he gave it his own name for a good reason, because it doesn't exist in conventional wisdom. So why not give it? See, I was a little too derogatory to Tesla, you know, in thinking that he was just a showman, and that's the only reason why he had to make up his own nomenclature, was to go, wow, and hey, see everybody, I came up with something different, when he really didn't. No, he actually did come up with something that conventional wisdom could not bring itself to come up with. For one reason or another, just couldn't go there. And still can't go there. A century later, it can't go there. So radiant energy is correct. It's unique. It's non-duplicated, and it's not covered by conventional wisdom. And I now define it for you. I tell you what it is. It's negative unity power factor, which almost all electrical engineers claim does not exist. Oh yeah, it exists. In the real world, as well as in the world of the simulator, it does exist.